Welcome to A Physician's Guide to Retirement, the show where we explore what comes after the full schedule, the on-call nights, and the identity of being the doctor. For many physicians, retirement isn't a single decision. It's a transition. It can bring relief and freedom, but also unexpected questions. Who am I without the role? How do I stay connected to purpose and community? What happens to relationships, routines, and the sense of responsibility that shape decades of practice? Each episode, we'll sit down with physicians who are stepping away from clinical work, some gradually, some all at once, to hear what the shift really looks like. We'll talk about the practical side of leaving medicine, the emotional side of letting go, and the opportunities that open up when your time is finally your own. From part-time work and volunteering to second careers, creative pursuits, mentorship, and learning to rest without guilt, this is an honest conversation about closing one chapter and building the next. Whether you're years away, counting down the months, or already retired and recalibrating, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Imparato. Let's talk about the transition with purpose, with clarity, and with honesty. Welcome to our next edition of our podcast series, A Physician's Guide to Retirement. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Imparato, also to be known from now on as the man who failed retirement. I trained at the Joint Center for Radiation Therapy, the Harvard Joint Center, practiced for 33 years, mostly in private practice. And then when I aimed to retire, I ended up going to work for the insurance industry, where I am currently the manager of operations for radiation oncology and medical oncology. Today, I have two guests with me. First, Dr. Thalworth, who completed his radiology training at the University of North Carolina. He rapidly became involved with the ACR, rising to the president of the chapter in 1992. He then became chief of staff at his hospital and sat on the board until 2014. He then rose to the ACR national level, serving in multiple positions, ultimately culminating a year as ACR president in 2004. He then became involved in RSNA, where he sat on the board of directors until 2014, when he became the CEO of the ACR, where he served until his retirement in 2004. Dr. Jim Junker completed his residency at Mallinckrodt and then entered a private practice as well. He also became quickly involved with his local chapters and also became very involved with his hospital, serving as medical staff president at two different hospitals and serving on three hospital boards. He then went on to serve as chief medical officer of his hospital in 2012, where he served until he retired on December 31st of 2019. And he adds he has thoroughly enjoyed his retirement. So, gentlemen, welcome. So, the first question I want to ask is just to go over again. Both of you at the ends of your career had very prestigious positions. And so, sometimes stepping down for something like that can be really difficult transition. So I'd like you to just go through with me what made you decide that, okay, now's the time to give it a rest. And start in reverse alphabetical order. So Bill, why don't you go ahead first?
Oh, thanks, John. And thanks all. Thanks to you for the invitation to participate in this and to all who take the opportunity to listen to it. This is a great series. As far as my retirement, I finished my clinical career, as you mentioned, in 2014 with Catawba Radiology and transitioned into the role of CEO of the ACR, which was clearly a totally different career, if you will. It was a great second career. When I retired from clinical practice, I must admit missing some of the clinical aspects there, you know, all the clinical aspects. And likewise, with the ACR time, I was with it in five-year contracts and so did two cycles of that. And it was pretty natural time. Then I was at that time 73 and ready to get more control of my time. I certainly missed the kind of excitement and very, quite frankly, intense time with the ACR when I fully retired. But most importantly, I think I really missed the people Obviously, our ACR staff were fantastic dealing with other radiology leaders, and particularly the ACR board and board leadership, as well as both domestic and international leaders. So, but as far as the day-to-day intensity, I must admit it took me about 15 minutes to get used to not having that. And when people asked me what I was going to do after retirement, I said it was what I was not going to do. I was not going to set an alarm in the morning. I was not going to sit on Zoom calls, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day. I'd say the most important thing to me was getting control of time for time with family, time to do things I wanted to do.
Great. So, Jim, same question to you. You held these multiple prestigious positions. What made you finally decide to retire?
Well, I had two transitions. The first was when I was asked to become chief medical officer. That meant I was a very part-time radiologist because the hospital system mandated that every one of their chief medical officers practice part-time. This was a very important aspect of my years in the CMO position. When I began the CMO position, we had certain goals, objectives, et cetera. And over those 7 years, basically we accomplished those. And I was getting older. I wanted to spend more time with my wife, my family. We were getting grandchildren. And it was time. I was very content with what I'd done in my clinical career and my administrative career. And, you know, there was more to life than the practice and the, you know, the administrative duties. So the transition was very straightforward for me, and it worked out very well. One thing that I've enjoyed with the retirement is working with the ACR, and I want to thank our ACR staff for putting this together and all the people who will be listening to this. It's an incredible organization, and during my years of practice, the college was always there for me whenever I needed help, even as a CMO with some questions for Tom Hoffman. I mean, you guys, it was like having you in the chair next to me when I was reading.
Yeah, certainly the kudos are definitely deserved by the ACR staff. They have been phenomenal in many, many ways.
I think both of you kind of hit on an interesting topic in that, or an interesting point. Both of you felt like you had accomplished what you needed to accomplish and felt satisfied. And I think that's really special, because I think for many people, they're just looking for the next achievement. And when to, you know, draw the line and say we're done can sometimes be very difficult for people, especially those of you like you who rose to high positions in your organizations. So now let me switch to what the meat of this issue. And the biggest concern of people that are retiring is always financing. I mean, that really is the core of what determines a person's ability to retire or not to retire. So, Bill, I want to start with you. And, you know, and when we've spoken in the past, you kind of mentioned some of the things that your group did, your private group did. Could you go through that again? Because I think it's very illuminating on what can be achieved in a private group versus an employed position.
Well, I sure be happy to. Let me first say that as a disclaimer, this is not legal advice, nor am I a certified financial advisor. And please understand that I've had experiences over time of quite frankly, some alternative investments and been burned by those. And again, I will say that I'm now happily affiliated with an investment firm that I really trust. In fact, work as a consultant for them because they have many radiologists and radiology practice clients. I think that it really is critical, as you mentioned, it is a critical concern for anybody who's considering retirement. Are they financially ready to do that? And with no defined end point of that retirement period, obviously, you have to be flexible. Our practice, we did have several opportunities to defer income, and particularly, you know, once my kids were educated and, you know, I was in, if you will, kind of prime earning years of the practice. We had several opportunities that both then and with the ACR to defer income so that I could basically augment the normal pension and profit sharing plan contributions. And so I would really highlight to anyone listening that look for those opportunities, whether it be contributing to your IRA and making sure that you're maximizing if there's matching funds coming from your practice or employer, looking for ways to sort of store more nuts away for the winter, if you will. And to get two examples, when I was with the Catawba Radiology Associates, we developed what's called a cash balance plan that honestly I didn't get to use as long as because of my transition to working for the college as some of my colleagues, but it enabled some of those folks to actually retire in their late 50s, early 60s very comfortably because they were able to contribute funds in through this cash balance plan, which is a defined benefit type of plan. I won't go into the details. The second, when I was working for the college, if you do work for a not-for-profit organization, many of you working for healthcare systems, et cetera, may find it, you can establish what's called a 457B plan, which allows you to contribute funds over and beyond your pension plan and your IRA. And I think in 2026, the maximum allowable contributions to those is about $24,500 a year. So it's those are two examples of ways to try to put more money away and have it grow or tax-free until you take it in.
Thank you. Now, Jim, when we spoke last, you made the comment that you started planning for retirement the day you finished your residency. Go through that, your life plan with us, if you will.
Well, I think it was Einstein who said how amazing the power of compound interest is. And starting off young, although radiologists are starting off perhaps 10 years, you know, after guys they went to college with, it's so important to start with putting away money early. And I agree completely with Bill. We had similar consults. We had similar advice. And then as assets accumulated, I was able to get further consults from a trusted advisory firm. And that made a big difference for me. We need guidance. Most of us are not experts on finance, believe me. And it's just so nice to have someone there to guide you and lay out a plan for your future and, candidly, your entire family's future.
So the famous saying goes, physicians are poor businessmen. And I think that to a degree, it's true. We focus on taking care of our patients, keeping up with the literature. And we, for the most part, are not very savvy at trying to run our finances. So you're right. Getting a trusted advisor who believes in the same plan you do and can help you achieve that plan, I think that's crucial. But as I thought about this, as I prepare for this podcast, you know, I do want to address, lack of a better word, the elephant in the room. The three of us are of a generation, you know, our cumulative ages span centuries. And in this day and age, people are coming out in a different situation. We know for a fact that the average medical student today graduates with over $300,000 of debt. It may even be much higher than that. So thinking back to those days, and if someone is, let's say, in their 40s, probably still paying off medical school debt, you know, how do you negotiate that? And the other thing, and Bill, this is why I asked you about your particular group, the vast majority are going to be employed by health systems. And those health systems have very cut and dry defined benefits. So a lot of the flexibility, a lot of the things you brought up, which are fantastic, may not be offered by your employer. So, you know, so if I'm a 45-year-old guy that happens to be listening to this and I've got, still have like $250,000 of debt, you know, how do you negotiate that? I mean, that would have been a mortgage from all of us back in the day.
No, I think it's a great point, Joe. And unfortunately, we have seen that progress over time with the cost of medical education going up substantially. I do think that certainly debt relief is a key cornerstone of positioning your financial status better for both the present and also, of course, for the future. So I think that, again, going back to Jim's point about having a trusted advisor, they can sit down with you and look at ways to structure both your debt payments again, whether it be medical school debt or other debt, relative to, you know, your investment portfolio and your ability to then take advantage of that compound interest, quite frankly, miracle that you'd like to do as much as possible. So I do feel for the folks coming out with those large debt burdens. I do think that you do need great advice. And that's why I think that finding an investment advisor that looks at the whole picture, I think Jim mentioned this, is your whole picture, not just, okay, let's just look at your portfolio and what did it return last year. You have to have personal attention for that. So I think, you know, I was a little wary of big firms, you know, large investment entities or banks, you know, that manage that and give you sort of their own products and the like. I think you really do need to have someone who's willing to look at your entire situation to advise you best.
Well, I agree with Bill. This debt hit me early on in my practice because we, in addition to the hospitals, we had 6 offices with mammography, ultrasound, fluoro units, and even had a linear accelerator. So I had to buy into the practice, the depreciated assets of the practice, and that was a multiple 6-figure buy-in now, not then. And we paid it off in 4 years. My wife was a nurse executive. We lived on one salary, and we just poured the rest into the debt relief. Sometimes you have to make some pretty hard choices to put this debt in the rearview mirror. You know, it's not so much what you earn, it's what you keep and what you can, you know, devote towards that debt relief. My gosh, you shouldn't be paying off educational debt at age 60. It's just, we're so bright and we've shown such discipline, and that needs to be applied to this problem too. And it can be successfully.
Yeah. I know there are mechanisms for the debt relief. You know, some of these loans, if you practice at a not-for-profit for 10 years, you can get a lot of that forgiven.
Well, while you're on that topic, though, Joe, I would also mention that as people get, we, you know, have sort of a pre-retirement planning focus of this session, people really need to look at their practice. And as Jim mentioned, if you're an owner of assets within the practice, whether it be the professional corporation or whether it be other things like outpatient centers or equipment, you need to understand the buyout mechanisms as you're doing your retirement plan. And you need to understand, is there a severance package that you're entitled to? Does it require that you stake, that you give a certain amount of notice to your practice? Again, if it's a hard assets, and again, we likewise owned outpatient imaging center and equipment, know how that buyout is structured in your contract.
So, Bill, as we talk about debt, you know, one of the issues that was raised by Jim is when you join even a private practice, there is often debt that you are required to take on as part of becoming a member of the practice or becoming partner in the practice. Can you just touch base on that and what the potential pitfalls can be?
Sure. It really is important because, as you say, I said earlier that they're probably carrying some educational debt, and then to be faced with a buy-in, whether it be to the professional corporation or to assets that the practice owns, whether it be outpatient imaging centers, equipment, and that type of thing. I think it's really important, first of all, to get good legal advice to review those documents when you do buy in. I do think that the long-term value of that, at least certainly as it was in my case, and I suspect in Jim's, it was valuable to be then a member and participate in the revenues that came from those portions of the practice. But as importantly, you need to know what the conditions are when it's time to step out. In other words, does the practice have a severance arrangement such that if you've been with the practice a certain amount of time, are you entitled to a portion of the billings for your services subsequent to your departure from the practice? Or what is the arrangement for buyout of the the technical component assets that the practice may own? Really important to consider those in your pre-retirement plan.
Thank you. I think even joining an academic practice, I think I cannot stress enough getting legal advice. Oftentimes, you can't change the parameters of the contract because they're uniform across the organization, but at least you understand what the implications of everything in the contract is. So I think, financial advice, legal advice,
And I think one of the other areas that we should touch on is tax advice. You know, I was very fortunate that I had the same tax guy for 35 years, both when I was running my private practice and also did my personal taxes and my family's taxes, to be honest. When he finally retired and I joined, and he sold his practice to a mega corporation, let's just say I did not get the individualized care that I was accustomed to. And as a result, I underpaid one of the quarterly payments, so I had to pay like a little interest and a little penalty. And now I finally have found a new guy who basically is similar to the guy that retired. So I think it, you know, all of these things, and it can sometimes seem so overwhelming in the beginning of your career, but you need to establish these early on in your career, to your point, buddy, so you don't make the missteps that you might otherwise make. Jen, anything to add?
Well, I completely agree with what Bill said. And for the younger generation, when I teach senior medical students and we talk to them about contracts and I ask them, where would you go for an attorney? They get online and they find some attorney. They'll do the contract for $500 or they'll do the contract for $1,000. And I said, you want somebody with gray hair, 20 years experience. You want somebody this is like a prenuptial agreement. You want to have this all laid out, the good, the bad, benefits, risks, alternatives, and so you can make an informed decision. Don't try to save money for these critical things with legal advice or accounting advice.
So, to your point then, where do you go to find the attorney that you need or the financial guy that you need?
I'd call, first of all, for a healthcare attorney, what do? You call the college, and they've got a list of great healthcare attorneys in your state that you can call on. And I guarantee you that individual will know some accountants who can provide excellent analysis of that group's, you know, financial well-being for you. Again, turn to the college.
Oh, and actually that, in having worked with our legal department with the college for decades, they really are a great resource. And, also, I wouldn't hesitate if you're joining a practice, you could talk to some of the members of the practice of who in their community, because you're going to be joining a community, who they've used and of trust. And trust, I think that's the real key factor, because again, you don't want to be, you know, the 4,000th client of some mega, you know, law firm or a CPA firm. You know, you want to have someone that you can call when you need their assistance, or have someone who's going to watch over some of your circumstances to help you avoid your challenges of making a misstep along the way.
So, again, I think, Jim, you hit a very important point, and I wonder how many of our radiologists, or in my case, radiation oncologists that are coming out, have any clue of what the American College of Radiology has to offer in that regard. I suspect in many cases, because of the amount of dues, where they may have a limited fund that they can use for various dues for various organizations, they may be reluctant to even join the college or to even contact them. But I think that's an important point, is that the college is a resource, and I strongly suspect an underutilized resource with many people, and not just the youngest people, but even, I bet you there are people in their 50s and maybe even 60s that are not fully aware of what the college has to offer. But it is important to get advice from an organization that can be relied upon to look after your best interests, and that's really important. So now let me switch gears again, and let's talk a little bit more about the approach to retirement. So you've got your finance guy, you've got your tax guy. The other piece of the puzzle is, as we get older, is you need to get your estate plan in order. And I think that's also another important part that oftentimes isn't recognized or isn't thought of. And again, I'd be happy to hear your thoughts on that. We'll start with Bill.
No question that that's a critical thing. And I think what the radiologist needs to do is sit down usually obviously necessarily with your spouse and say, what type of retirement do you want to structure? And what kind of plans do you want to make? What do you want to do relative to your family or relative to heirs or, you know, legacy giving? Those types of things are really critical. And then you can sit down with an attorney, and whether it be establishing trusts or making sure that your regular sort of foundational documents of will and power, medical power of attorney and the like. And the key of doing this soon, because you don't know when, you know, retirement may come along before you plan on it, whether it be because of illness, family circumstances, your practice is taken over by an entity you don't want to continue to work with, et cetera. So it is important to get this done early so that you're not caught scrambling, you know, when some circumstance you didn't anticipate comes along. And again, I really do think you want to customize your circumstances both legally and financially, and not some off-the-shelf, you know, arrangement.
Jim, I remember, like, you raised some important points about, you know, the tax consequences as you do your estate planning, and things like a 529 for your grandkids as a way to put money aside for the future.
I agree with what Bill said, that advisor should be the CFO, chief financial officer for your family. He or she should be coordinating with your accountant and with your attorney to optimize everything from tax status to lifestyle to legacy. And 529, that's just one small part of it. But this is a big package that you're dealing with, and it's a multi-generational impact package. So it's critical that you have great counsel on this and that you know, follow what they say. We're not experts on it.
Yeah, I use the analogy of them being the CFO of your family, and my wife pointed out to me that she's the CEO, and I think I can claim the CIO because I usually have to do all the tech stuff, like, you know, restart the modem when her internet goes down.
I think, you know, the analogy, Jim, is actually very accurate, because to a degree, our lives have now become, in essence, our business. So now, you know, we get into retirement, and now we essentially are, you know, junker in corporate. And I think people need to look at it that way. And just like any organization, you need to have certain people assigned certain tasks to make sure that it runs properly and it runs the way you want it to run. So I think it's a great analogy. I will say I've often felt that medical schools and even residencies should start offering these type of financial advice courses as part of a person's education going into medicine. And, you know, I'm on the faculty of medical school. I was on the faculty of Northwestern for 28 years. And to my knowledge, I don't know that they've really done that yet. And are you aware of that? I know you both teach. Any of you know of any efforts on that regard?
Two things. Any resident who came through Mallinckrodt when Ron Evans was chairman got some financial education. I mean, he made sure that, and he made sure on day one, within 5 hours of matriculating there, we joined the college. So that was big in residency. Currently, I'm one of the teachers for a capstone course for the soon-to-be graduating senior medical students at St. Louis U School of Medicine, and we deal with this, the financial aspects. And God bless them, the administration there realized that none of this had been covered in the medical school curriculum, and they asked some alumni in private practice to come back in and help them with it. So some medical schools are seeing the need for this, and it is critical, the need for this. We give the seminar type presentation, and then we stick around, and the individual questions that were asked, just amazing. Very, very helpful for these students.
As far as your question about it really does vary department to department as far as the radiology residencies. if there's an internal champion that this kind of education exists, then it happens. And quite frankly, but it's not part of ACGME requirements or et cetera, unfortunately. And so I do think that those who try to match into radiology residencies, and again, I know that that's a primary population of this podcast, but I do think that that's looking for that as a resource within a residency program is worthwhile.
So, you know, I think with everything we've covered today, I think it's important for people listening to realize that retirement is not something you determine, you know, 2 days before you actually decide you don't want to work anymore. That it really is a life plan from the very beginning. And you need to have trusted advisors along the way. If there's someone that does not fit your plan, you need to swap them out and get somebody else. I think that, you know, that's very important. And also to talk to some of the senior people, and although unfortunately there are senior people who have not done much in the way of planning, sad to say. So it's retirement is not a one day event. It is literally a lifetime event, and coming to this huge transition in our lives requires an enormous amount of planning. I guess the final question, and I think a lot of people in our audience would probably ask this, is, you know, how do you know you have enough money?
I'll jump in. I think first of all, you really have to have made a realistic, and I emphasize realistic, assessment of how you plan to live in retirement. And understand that it'll be nearly as expensive, if not more expensive, than when you were working. So don't underestimate what you need. But I do think that going back to the comments that each of us made earlier, is you really do want to have an independent individual that you trust. And I stress individual because many of the folks who get involved in retirement plans through their employer, whether it be private practice or academic, whatever, basically you get farmed out to some major investment bank or investment corporation. And finding a person who knows you and knows what your desires and plans are is really tough in that circumstance. So again, I mentioned earlier that I'm very pleased with the relatively small but very capable and innovative group that I'm working with. You want to get to the point because come retirement time, you want to simplify. You want to make sure that, you know, if you keel over, your spouse has the one person that they can go to and that can say, yes, this is what's been put in place. This is how we access it, and we'll continue to take care of you. You don't know when that is going to be necessary. So I do think that having people that really build on the fact that, you know, you're going to need a steady, predictable cash flow after you retire. How do you structure, and again, a couple of examples, owning your own bonds rather than being an investor in a bond fund that's influenced by, you know, some major, you know, the state nurses union that owns a big block of that bond fund. You want to be sure that those people really have you in mind.
Jim, anything else to add?
Well, I agree with what you guys have said. There's just one other factor that I think is critical. It's not only you that's retiring, the marital unit is retiring. And all of a sudden, you're going to be around a lot more than you were. So the marital dynamics are going to change. And this needs to be considered as well. That's all. I mean, it's not something I planned as extensively as I should have with the process, but it's just something to consider.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a topic for another podcast, is spending a lot of time with your spouse. You know, one of the nice things about the transition to the job I took is that I do work from home. So I've experienced that to a degree, but at the same time, I obviously was still working. So most of the time I was squirreled away in my office, but it is a huge change. It is really a huge change. So to the audience, please. We are very interested in your questions, your comments, any topics that you might have. We have an email address that you can contact us. It's elagreca@acr.org. I'll read that again. elagreca@acr.org. Please don't hesitate to give us your comments, questions, and any ideas that you might have. And who knows, we might even have you on as a guest. So I want to thank Bill, Jim. I can't thank you enough for your very sage advice. Enjoy your retirement. I hope to join you very shortly.
Thank you, Jim.
As we wrap up today's episode, remember, retirement in medicine isn't just an ending. It's a handoff, a chance to step back from the pace of clinical life while carrying forward what matters most, your values, your relationships, and the parts of you that exist beyond the white coat. If this conversation resonated, share it with a colleague who's starting to think about what's next, and subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And if you have a story, a question, or a topic you'd like us to explore, send it our way. We'd love to include your voice. Until next time, take care of yourself the same way you always cared for others.